Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at acsmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Tuesday, February 8th, and I think it's football season, John. Don't know if you knew that. It started early. Actually, never stopped.
It never stops, man. Football season. We have joined the SEC levels of football never sleeps.
Oh, yeah.
We're there, man.
I am officially drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm in the 24/7 football cult. Like,
you're not drinking happening. The Kool-Aid. You are helping mass produce it at this point. You're in there. You're helping churn the vat.
I am on the assembly line, wearing the goggles, calling names out to the other people working with me, and we are all pulling in the same direction. I think the shift manager is definitely Odell Bredham Jr. He's the plant manager for sure.
If you don't follow, if you're not on Twitter, you're first of all, congratulations to you.
Yeah, you've made a great choice.
If you make your way onto there, just to see the chaos. Chief of propaganda for Michigan State is working overtime right now with a band of others. So much so that I will say, I won't name names, but there are people very close to the program who have openly laughed and noted how what was the word they used? Relentless, I think MSU Twitter was. It's like, I don't even know if that's a thing to be proud of. But if you're gonna Twitter the hardest.
I think my favorite thing is that he sends good night tweets just about every night that says sleep fast, Spartan Twitter. Which I just appreciate so much.
Well, Spartan Twitter has gone ablaze recently because, as you mentioned, football season doesn't sleep. The reason we've been having a hard time sleeping is Mel Tucker is doing the thing in the recruiting world. It's not just the portal anymore, baby. Nope. He does high school too, if you didn't know.
In case you'd missed it. He sure does the high school now. That sounded weird, but either way, he's in there, he's getting commits. Since the last time we talked, actually three commits for Michigan State, which is pretty wild. We have our first defensive commit and then two important positions on offense, quarterback and center. Let's start with the defense. So Michigan State landed defensive end Andrew DePape. Might be saying that name wrong. Don't care. Or DePoppy. I kind of like DePoppy. We're going to go with DePoppy. Big Poppy.
We want it to be something I don't think it is, but when has that stopped you or me from getting a last name wrong?
Quite literally never. So Andrew Big DePoppy is the number 133 recruit in the country. Mm. Checks in as a solid 4-star on 24/7 using 24/7's composite rating. He is the 22nd best all-time commit also to Michigan State per 24/7, which is kind of crazy. And I think I wanted to start with him because he is, in my estimation, a direct result of the hire of Brandon Jordan, the pass rush specialist coach that Michigan State brought on. And we talked about, I think, last week, maybe the week before. This quite simply is not the type of defensive lineman MSU has gotten since that troubled class of 2016, where they had a handful of really athletic guys up front. Andrew DePoppy, is something unlike they've had really since then. His pro comp is Max Crosby, who went to Eastern Michigan, but is a really good defensive end for the Raiders. This kid, he is a combination of that hire philosophy along with Mel Tucker's get big athletes philosophy. He's like the perfect marriage of that. He checks in at 6'5", 245 as a high school junior. So just the potential of this kid is is pretty enormous. And it's at that position that, you know, you could make an argument either protecting the passer or getting to the passer are the two most important things you can do in football. And this dude is very much in that second camp. Final thought, John, before I hand it over to you. This kid is the number two recruit in the state of Iowa. Like, I know it's Iowa, but when you can steal a top two or three or five kid from any state that is in your conference, mm-hmm. that's a big deal. So they just went in, took one of the best kids right out from under the nose of Iowa. Iowa, who last year landed, I believe he was from there. I'm going to try and get this last name right. He was a five-star kid, top 20. Yep, kid was number one in the state of Iowa. Xavier Nwankpa was the number one kid, four-star, committed to Iowa because that's his hometown team. That logic still applies to this kid, Big DePoppy, and yet Michigan State still went in and got him. So big, that's the first of these three is a really quite enormous land.
It's okay. So first of all, this kid, I believe, was a client of our new defensive line coach. Is that correct?
Not sure.
Well, someone who had
willing to believe it
at least attended some type of workshop camp of our. And here's I want to talk about that for a couple of things. One, there are 16 kids that are on Michigan State's offer board that are ranked higher than this kid on defensive end or defensive line alone. And MSU's has never offered at these types of kids before. First of all, I mean, rarely. And when I say that, I mean, they may have, but not with any realistic thought of getting them. Like, you send the letter because, I don't know, you want to be featured on the Instagram, maybe. But these guys, now granted, you're not going to get all of them. You may not even get a couple of them, but to be in consideration for guys from California, Florida, Alabama, Utah, Missouri, everywhere in the country, right? And as you mentioned, this isn't to knock this kid who made a decision very early. My point is, this kid is one of the best recruits Michigan State's ever had. You already mentioned that. He is, as I mentioned, 17th in just defensive line prospects this for his class of who Michigan State is going after. Okay. Yeah. So I'm just trying to contextualize everything for everybody, and also. I feel like today I'm going to be honest. I'm feeling a little plucky. I'm taking shots and making jokes today. The LSU refused to hire our defensive line coach, our defensive end rush specialist. They didn't want him in a coach position. And I just need to ask LSU or anybody, are you high? Like, one, just for recruiting alone. Right. But two, he's literally training and coaching not just NFL All-Pros. You mentioned Big DePape's comp is who was it?
Max Crosby.
Max Crosby. Yeah, that's a client of his. Like, his clients are literally the best defensive linemen in the world. All of them. All of them. And for any college football coach to be like, don't know if I want that guy on my staff. In what world are you living in where you have a guy that knows what he's doing more so than that guy? Like, it boggles the mind. And everyone's like, and this isn't me putting down Mel Tucker in any way, shape, or form. It's like, How was Mel Tucker the only person to be like, yeah, I think we can swing that? Like, what is everyone doing? How is it this easy?
It's such a great question. And yeah. Well, you know, he's serious when he was tweeting. You know, Brandon Jordan's also a good follow on Twitter. And if for nothing else, the flexes that he is able to pull out of, like, the clients that he works with, he's saying something about he was like grading or like watching film from the Senior Bowl, which took place this past weekend. Sure. And he was saying something about, or it might have been the Pro Bowl, and I think it was the Senior Bowl. And he's like, make sure, you know, as a defensive end, you get your inside foot around the tackle as you're like turning the corner, because it gives them less time to catch up. And he's like, sends off a couple tweets, and he's like, you know what, I'm just gonna let one of the GOATs, Gerald McCoy, I butchered his name a few weeks ago, the guy who played for the Bucks for the longest time, top five pick, Oklahoma legend, yep, six-time Pro Bowler. He's like, I'll just let him explain. And he posted, yeah, a 30-second clip of him coaching Gerald McCoy on the exact technique that he's talking about. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's like, if I'm a 17-year-old kid or even a transfer that's like, I really want to go to the NFL and learn from somebody, yeah, who's worked with guys that go there. I don't know how you see that and you're not like, I need to at the very least talk to these guys. And guess what? Like you said, I was going through like the top 150 and just saying guys that I've heard Michigan State's name and connection with. It's like 15 of the top 150, yeah, are visiting or are interested, including like two or three like big time five-star kids, like program, not that MSU's program needs to be transformed, but like guys that can take your level of talent from very good to very great overnight. So it's just, like you said, it boggles the mind just how much of a difference he has made, him and Tucker right off the bat. So, and then this is just one guy. We still have two other guys to talk about, which are both huge pickups.
Right, right. And I want to spend time on them, but I just want to also give a shout out to this kid, Andrew DePape.
Yeah.
And say, first of all, welcome aboard. Second of all, what foresight as a kid from Iowa to say, I could go, you know, jerk around with Kirk Ferentz or Suit Man, you know, or I might go, maybe I'll go get coached specifically by a guy who NFL all pros fly in private jets to go see. Like, maybe that's a better idea than going and hanging out in Iowa City and getting screamed at and by like, and being forced steroids or whatever they do there. maybe
I think instead of steroids you might mean corn.
Well, no, like, what was the thing they did recently where they like, so many people got sick because they like overworked them? Like, they literally overworked their strength and conditioning coach to the point where people were like having like seizures and stuff. And it was like,
oh, yeah, that was bad news. And maybe, then Urban Meyer tried to hire him.
Oh, well, I mean,
yeah,
there was, as Urban would tell you, results. There were some results. Like,
yeah, but wait, but also really quickly, you said they get on the private jets and fly. Guess where they're flying to now?
Mm-hmm.
East Lansing.
Which is what I'm saying, back to making fun of LSU, and not just who, and I make fun of them because they had him. Like, yeah, at one point he was like a analyst or whatever they wanted to call him, and they refused to give him a head or a coaching position, which is all he wanted. And by the way, you got to think that this guy is doing fairly well, like financially. I don't want to, you know, pocket watch, but like, if you know, the guys that he's training have some money, and like, yeah, I can't believe that LSU, who is a program that gets recruiting, right, would be like, I don't know, should this guy really be coaching our defensive line? Yeah, maybe he should, because he's literally coaching the guys that are in the Pro Bowl. Like, I just think, to macro it out, Austin, it's not going to happen immediately. I think you'll see an immediate impact. Don't get me wrong.
But you already have.
You have. I mean, on the field. Impact. You will see an immediate impact. He will transform and change the way the defensive ends, the defensive line plays. And then once you start to inject talent, a higher ceiling of talent like Andrew, that's going to change the way a 4-2-5 works. And we've talked about 4-2-5's, you know, shortcomings. One thing that solves not just a 4-2-5, but any defensive strategy's shortcomings is the defensive end getting to the quarterback. Athletes. Kind of solves it all.
It's Jimmy's and Joe's. It's bottom line, especially in college football and especially along the lines. It's Jimmy's and Joe's versus X's and O's. Like, I've been doing, and I'll come clean to everybody, I've been doing like this side project, just going through, and John knows all about it, like the different rosters throughout America, just to like see what the talent gap is from a true great, like in Alabama, Georgia, to even in Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And while first of all, I will say Ohio State's roster is even more absurd than you, like the gap between Ohio State and everybody else in the Big Ten is enormous. The fact that Michigan State has had the success that they have had against Ohio State in the past 10 years, 50, whatever it is nothing short of insane. Just insane. David and Goliath barely begins to touch on what Michigan State was able to do to Ohio State the couple of times they beat him and went to the Rose Bowl and all those other big wins. And it's because you appreciate it more when you see the numbers. But you see the difference in the real talent on the lines and in those teams in the SEC and those teams in the Big Ten. The difference is stark. It is incredible. Because again, look at Georgia. Georgia's defense, the front seven and their offensive line were so good that they had Stetson Bennett, a walk-on quarterback, a kid who came to Georgia, then left, then came back again, and only started because kids transferred and got hurt, win them a national championship against Alabama, because that's how good those parts of their team were. They embarrassed Michigan. Michigan, who is by best a year, decent amount.
The best year they've had in 25 years.
They were probably – they were at a worst the third most talented team in the Big Ten by a decent chunk, by the way. After that, it's pretty much Wisconsin and Michigan State, and it's a sizable gap between the two as of today, just in sheer recruiting talent. But they embarrassed them, and they would do it again, probably worse in the coming years, because it's just talent. So Brandon Jordan, yes. I mean, coaching can overcome a lot of things, but talent at the end of the day is what's going to win out. And he is going to bring that and coaching to East Lansing. And DePoppy is a great start So John, these other two guys, we want to talk about them because I think we just spent so much time, but it's a big get. Anytime you can land a guy who's one of the top 25 kids you've ever landed, it's a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. There were two more gets, though, and they are important positions on the field, like I said, at center and quarterback. We'll start with the center, Jonathan Slack from Martin Luther King School in Detroit, high three-star, actually percentage points away from being a four-star, top 400 kid in the country. I think it's a great get. He would be one of the more higher-rated offensive linemen that Michigan State has on its roster. He's coming in at a prime position in center. He's from Detroit, which is a city that obviously Michigan State has got some major momentum in, and you want to win all of those things. And then also his quarterback just so happens to be in this class and is a five-star by the name of Dante Moore. He is not the quarterback that committed to Michigan State. We'll talk more about that in a second, but he is a teammate of Slack's and has been to Michigan State several times and is apparently a very big fan of the program. So, not only is Slack in and of himself a great get for MSU, but what it could do for Michigan State in the city of Detroit and specifically with this King team is not a small part of the storyline.
It's right. You know, so, Austin, first of all, Detroit Martin Luther King churns out prospects. You want to own that
every year.
You want to own that high school. First of all, whether Dante Moore is there or not at quarterback, that's a good get.
Absolutely.
Let's just start there. The fact that he is the guy handing the ball, snapping the ball to a five-star quarterback, which, by the way, in Michigan, it's a decent football state. It's okay. It's good, maybe. Good in the sense of the word, not, you know, we hate that. We hate that word, but five-star quarterbacks don't happen a lot. Let's just put it in Michigan, right? Is that fair? Not a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This guy is. It doesn't hurt to have a guy committed that hangs out with that guy every day in very close quarters. So that's good. And then the other piece about the center position is one that, you know, at Michigan State, you know, you've had the Allen brothers, you've had the offensive line in general is somewhere that it's not a secret. It's got to get better. like it has to get better if Michigan State wants to take a jump from having cute, fun seasons like we had this year. And this is going to sound awful, but I'm feeling plucky. 11 win seasons where you win New Year's Six bowl games should be celebrated and are awesome, and they're fantastic, and they're huge for a program. They're also fun, but they're not big boy. Big boy is college football playoff, and Mel Tucker has set that expectation. Does it mean we're there yet? No. But you need an offensive line, as we've seen, every college football playoff participant needs to have a good offensive line to even compete. And because you see the mutants that are on the defensive line of all the teams, and it's out of control. And so, you know, that is like consistently going to be the place, a place of emphasis as we watch the recruiting cycle as the offensive line. And this is a good start. It can't be the only thing. It's got to be, you know, guys at this caliber and maybe even higher moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely spot on. It's a great get for a lot of different reasons, the ones you laid out. I mean, you pretty said it pretty well. But yeah, I mean, this is especially where, I mean, listen, I think the genius of what Mel Tucker has done so far with recruiting offensive linemen specifically is that he is looking for prototypes and trusting his coaching, because he knows that if you are going to go elephant hunting on that position group, you better have something to show for yourself, and you better be ready to go, because that is the position group that one doesn't settle. Like a great offensive lineman, a huge body like that, that's the top 100 kid. Those kids don't go to Northwestern. Those kids don't go to Kansas State. Those kids don't go to Cal. Those kids go to Alabama and Georgia and Ohio State and Clemson. Actually, not really Clemson, but no. LSU. So if you want to swim in those waters, you got to be ready to roll. And I think what he's done so far is said, I'm not ready to do that for those positions yet. I think that could be changing here very shortly. He may have tried with Keontae Goodwin last year, but he's gotten big body types that when they're coached up could turn into that caliber of player. I mean, these are like the guys he got last year, the Braden Millers, Gavin Brocious, Ashton Lepo. These are guys that are mid to high 3-star dudes. It's not national caliber level in and of itself, but with a great coach like Chris Kapilovic, you know, you hope that he can, you know, crank that up a little bit. So to your point, I just think he's laid a really good foundation for that, but it needs to improve. Like that recruiting is that's what's going to make you a national championship contender. And that's what the goal should be, right? Like you should be trying to compete otherwise, what's the point, right?
What are
like you should be trying to win a national championship every single year. And it's insane to just like say those things out loud, but it's also,
time. I don't care, dude. It's
but like, that's just the attitude adjustment as a program that I think Mel Tucker's brought, whether it's insane or not is a different subject, but
let's have a talk about that, because you know, this could be a long podcast, but I don't care. There is there's been an attitude adjustment. People are saying, you know, Mel Tucker brought and he was the exact right guy for that attitude adjustment. But I want to clarify something really quick. MSU, well, you know, as a fan base, ran Mark D'Antonio. They ran him.
Yeah.
Because he was no longer competing at a level that was good enough for Michigan State fans. Take that however you want. That's not a knock. That's not anything. That's just, there is an expectation at this program, whether it's deserved, undeserved, doesn't matter. And back to our original point, if you're not going for the nat, what's the point? We're not Maryland. We're not Iowa State. You don't play football to beat your rival and say, that was fun. What a fun year. Like, what's the point? Why invest so much time and energy unless the goal is the whole thing?
And John, as the great Herm Edwards would say, you play to win the game.
And not win just the game, win it all. Like compete, care enough to compete at the highest level. Otherwise, we're wasting Saturdays. I have plenty of other things I can be doing with my life. And frankly, up until now, I've been wasting it because Michigan State was not competing at that level. Even Mark D'Antonio's best years, I mean, I'm feeling plucky. But they're fine. It was great. You saw the ceiling of it, though, right? And the moment you watch, you know, Michigan fans and trolls start to compare their run to D'Antonio's, is the reason that they'll never succeed. Because if you're comparing yourself to what Mark D'Antonio did, you already lost.
Yep.
You're lost, because he took and created a culture that won with a group of people that probably belonged in the American Conference, the Big Ten with it. And that's incredible. That is legendary.
I will say, because I completely agree with your point here, I think the further you get away from Mark D'Antonio, the more impressed I actually am becoming. Yeah. When you really look at what he accomplished, I don't think people should. I think it's actually become sort of popular to make him like a little bit of a punching bag because of the way he went out and just. And listen, he did not go out on good terms. I would make no mistake about it. A lot of people felt as though he was just kind of mailing it in afterwards for a while there. And I don't necessarily agree with that. But I mean, the juice was gone. I mean, like it just was. Like, there's really no, you know, there's no arguing it. And what you've seen come back now is just an incredible manifestation of all other things Michigan State fans. Like, we're at a point where we're kind of over-indexing on what any MSU fan would ever really allow you to feel like was possible. You know what I mean? Like, we're talking about national championships, and do we want to like beat our chest and say, oh, we made the Rose Bowl, oh, we made the, you know, Cotton Bowl, we won the Big Ten, we beat Ohio State, all that stuff? Yeah, but you know, if you want to shoot higher, you gotta talk the talk and walk the walk. And I just feel like, you know, Mark D'Antonio did so much. He got so much, you know, blood out of that rock. But if you actually want to be that, then you need a guy like Mel Tucker to come in and do things like he's doing. And guess what? He needs to do even better. That's the thing, is like, he's doing an incredible job, all things considered. Like, this is a top five class right now in the country with only five recruits. All the teams in front of them, if I remember correctly, are, I believe it's Notre Dame. Yeah. Georgia's number one, Notre Dame two, Penn State three, Arkansas four. MSU has jumped up to five tonight with the commitment of Bo Edmondson, the quarterback, who we'll talk about. And they only have five recruits. Arkansas has eight. Penn State has eight. Notre Dame has eight. Georgia has nine. Like, that's hard to do. That means you've got five really high quality recruits. And this is the year too. It's actually really interesting. I was reading an article. Andy Staples wrote a great article about Brian Harsin's situation in Auburn. He's kind of like cutting through some of the BS and saying that did you read it?
Dude, we talked about it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It was just incredible. He's like, they're firing him because he's a bad recruiter. They're not firing him for any other reason. He's like, don't kid yourself. And it was more than that. It was an interesting exercise in what it takes to win and what you need to do to be great. And that this class, the class that Mel Tucker is building right now, the one after your first full recruiting cycle, is essentially the entire tail of the tape for who you are as a recruiter, for like any successful coach. It was really amazing the consistency with which this was true. And we're talking national champions. We're talking guys who flamed out. Like, it is pretty much shot for shot, the truth. And that's what I think excites me so much about this, is that you're seeing some big time muscle flexing going on right now from Tucker. And if this is the indicator of how things are going to go, if you can keep this class in that top 10 to 12 conversation, and then you stack those two, three on top of each other, because you're not in the SEC having to play four of the other teams in the top 10 every single year, you're going to put yourself in the conversation sooner rather than later for making that playoff with some real consistency. And you know, depending on where the roster strengths shake out, you could, it's not unfathomable to think that MSU is in this conversation sooner rather than later. And by sooner, I mean the next, you know, not this year, but, you know, 2-3 years down the line, if they keep doing what they're doing now, it's not out of the question.
And let's clarify, Mark D'Antonio walked so this program could run.
Yes.
What he had to do, what he did for Mel Tucker to be able to come in and do what he's doing. So don't get that. I don't want anyone to be upset.
No.
You know, it is appreciated. He took this team and made this program what it is, and will be forever thankful. But it can't be lost that this same group of fans ran him because they wanted more. And
yeah.
Is Mel Tucker the guy that can give them more? It's looking like he has the goods. Long way to go. Long way to go.
Victim of his own success. That's yeah. Mark D'Antonio. But guess, I mean, to your point, like, dude, I love him like he's a family member. That guy, he gave me some of the best moments of my sporting life. And just right. Again, just to quickly highlight it before we talk about Bo Edmondson, the classes he's throwing together, in 2008, he had the 10th best class in the Big Ten. 2008, he had the 9th best class in the Big Ten. 2009, he jumped up to the 4th best class. And then we had 2010, he's again the 4th best class. And that's with landing a guy like Will Golston, who was a 5-star. So just like, he was batting in that like 20s range for most of the time in terms of national rank. That's going to keep you relevant. That's going to build up a really nice program. And with some great coaching, you can do some really, really fun things. But if you want to win a national championship, if you want to compete for the Big Ten title every single year, you need more than that, and you need great coaching. It's really hard yeah. to do, but I think Mel can do it.
Well, and Austin, here, I'll tell you just really quickly. D'Antonio averaged 34.7th best class in 24/7 composite.
Yeah.
35th best class in his time at MSU. And he took – no program can touch what D'Antonio did with the talent he had.
It's not close.
He was able to do things that other coaches just simply couldn't do, find talent that wasn't there. And he did it with guys that no one took a pass or would give it a shot at. And you know, that is worth something. And now the culture he built, you can use that shell, you know, what he did and that attitude.
Absolutely.
And now you just put in more talent. And you can see, and then the ceiling's the roof, as we said, right?
Yeah. So, you know what it is? It kind of reminds me of, like, if you remember what Jimbo Fisher did when he took over for Bobby Bowden at Florida State.
Sure.
Like, you know, that's dating me a little bit, but D'Antonio, you know, Bobby Bowden kind of left on like a South. Florida State was like the power. They were a freak unit for 20 years of him being there. And then, you know, he kind of got older and just didn't have the energy he once had. Jimbo Fisher gets in charge and just turns that thing back into, you know, just turbo mode. And then they win a national championship, and you've just seen the difference that it's made. So, all right. So we've spent a half hour talking about that. Let's talk about Bo Edmondson.
Really?
Michigan State. Go ahead.
No, really quick. Yeah. We don't have to go quickly, but I think the point about Bo is you just, Mel Tucker and staff just took a Lake Travis, Texas kid, which if you're unfamiliar with high school football, it is a powerhouse. 6A, the highest level in Texas football, quarterback. And this kid, and here's why it's special. They took him, he took MSU both ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's this early in the recruiting cycle. That's perfect time to take someone like this, because we talked about Dante Moore earlier. He's the guy that I think MSU is focusing on, just like a lot of major schools are. Bo Edmondson's not stupid. He knows that. He also wants to be the guy. And he's claiming his spot at Michigan State over a lot of really good schools, by the way, if you look at his offer list. And who's to say if he sticks around? But that's why this is such a good pick. Because
yeah, I agree.
If this is plan B, you
went into Texas and took a high 3-star quarterback out of there, and a high 3-star quarterback out of Texas, same way we talk about Georgia 3-stars, not any different in Texas. That's a nice get.
Uh-huh.
And like you said, this is not an either or situation with him and Dante Moore. Sorry. Michigan State could easily take both of them. And to your point, they chose each other. Like, the fact that he was able to commit says how much Michigan State likes him, to be honest with you. Like, he could have called them. This happens all the time. They call the coaches and say, I want to commit. The coach says, we're not ready to take that yet. It happens, whether people know it or not. So the fact that MSU and Jay Johnson were into it enough to take him is a very big deal. And again, for him, it's smart because he locks in a place at a great university. He, you know, puts himself in position to come to the Big Ten and compete and make sure he doesn't get left sitting at the dinner table. And also, like, I'm not saying that. Okay, if you go back historically, MSU's the quarterback that succeeds for Michigan State is like never the guy you think it's going to be. Peyton Thorne, perfect example. Connor Cook, perfect example. Kirk Cousins, exactly. So to rule anything out with Bo Edmondson today, the day he committed, is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But again, it's not to say that they won't take more. I think this could be a two quarterback approach. But worst case, Bo Edmondson is now committed to a great recruiting class. Guess what? If he wants to open his recruiting back up, he's going to have tons of teams knocking down his door. Tons of them. So either way, smart move for both. I watched a little bit of his tape. He's got a really smooth motion. He honestly kind of reminds me of Connor Cook a little bit. And listen, anytime you can get a quarterback from Texas that's playing high quality football for that long, that's pretty exciting. I thought another cool thing was that he said he was really excited to play for Jay Johnson. Like, he specifically called out that he was excited to play for that coach. And I think that, again, says quite a bit.
Also, this guy is, if you so choose to go find some tape, he's playing in front of more people than MAC schools do. And like, I don't mean that. Like, that is legitimate. If you're a high school kid and you are regularly playing football in front of more than 10,000 people, that's wild to me. Like, I can't get my head around that. That's more than Eastern Michigan averages. Like, that is. So he's never going to be afraid. I'll tell you that much. So, and then one more thing, Austin. One more guy we didn't talk about. Mel picks up another portal commit. Our biggest.
Go on.
You forget. We had someone defect to the portal, but Mel went and got him back. And
okay, I see what you did there.
I think we got a good one here, don't you?
Yeah, Ma'a Gaiote-Ote. pretty cool that Mel can just lose a guy and then go pick him right back up right out of the portal. But yeah, awesome for Michigan State, obviously, that Ma'a decided, you know, I don't want to spin the wheel of the transfer portal, but I'd rather stay and build something here. I can't blame him for getting spooked by these guys coming in and being like, hey, where's my playing time? But I think it's pretty awesome that he, you know, decided now I'm going to come back and I'm going to stick it out. I do wonder, and this is pure speculation, nothing more, if this he might know that somebody else is thinking about moving around or not coming back, or like what might be happening. There's some guys, you know, down the roster a little bit that I know there have been questions about. So you do wonder if that's the case, and maybe he saw the spot open back up. But either way, I mean, this kid was the best recruit in last year's class. He's like one of the three highest graded, if not the highest graded, I think, actually player on the entire roster technically. So yeah, you don't want to lose guys like that. Michigan State didn't want him to leave. They didn't push him into the portal like they have some other guys. So pretty great that he came back.
Last thing I'll say is before we take a commercial, which who knows if it happened. Last player to hit the portal and come back, Connor Hayward.
We all saw how that worked out. Connor, quick shout out, last football thing. Looked great in the Senior Bowl.
He did.
People are actually talking about him.
Uh-huh.
Pretty pumped. Pretty pumped. All right. Let's take a commercial break. Let's see if this even works. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Then we're back. John, I regret to inform you we have to talk about basketball.
So you say that, But I think it's fine time, if you're ready and comfortable, to come clean. You've had a change of heart, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I don't know if it's really a change of heart or if it's just this is just getting so difficult. Like, I want this to work. I really want it to work. I love basketball. It's been my favorite son for most of my life. But
wait, Austin.
Go ahead.
I want our listeners to put themselves in the mindset of being broken up with. And now I feel
it's not you, it's me, but it's actually definitely you. I just don't know how many more, like, what's the saying? Like, the definition of insanity is like continuing to do things when you know the outcome or something like that. Like, that's what this feels like. Like, I have such a hard time. Like, I am definitively more interested in the transfer portal and football offseason right now than I am this basketball season in this moment. And I think maybe it's just because it's February. Like, I just want to tell myself that that's the case, because this happens every single year. Like, we've been doing this for what, 4 or 5 years? You can probably find at least 10 episodes where we're saying the same thing every single season. And it's, I just don't know how much I can like give to this team when I know that if I tune back in a few months or a few weeks or whatever, things will hopefully have righted themselves. But like right now, there's just too much juice coming from the football side of things for me to give myself to this basketball team the way that I want to. I think that's the important part to really note here, is I want to, like, badly. I badly want to be living and dying with every basket, like we did with Cassius's teams and like we've done with so many others. But I just have such a hard time. But the one thing that we were talking about, John, is that, like, it's not like this is so not new. And I remember feeling this way with that Cassius Winston team that ended up beating Duke and going to the, you know, Final Four and all of that, that storybook run. There were so many times during that season where I was like, I cannot stand watching this team play basketball. Like, it was, and that's that, like, I think this is what worries me. I had very real emotional reactions to that team. I'm not having any right now. That's why I think I'm just not like here at the moment. I'm just kind of checked out. Like, who knows what's going on? The room could be on fire. I don't know. You'd have to tell me, because I'm not paying enough attention. I'm watching the games. I want to be very clear about that. I'm watching these games, but my physical reaction is just so like I remember watching this Rutgers game. And I was just like, oh, all right, this sucks. I should be madder than that.
Sure. I'm happy you can exercise your demons here. And I want the listeners to know that I'm still all in, baby. I love this kid. I don't care if this kid, you know, isn't his best, because we know this kid can turn it on. And the reason, Austin, you are frustrated with this kid is like we talked about before we started. He comes home with a D+, and you ask him what happened. He says he just wasn't really tuned. He just wasn't focused. It's like, why? It's like,
He forgot there was a test. That's what happened. He came home and you're like, why'd you get a D? He's like, I forgot to study. Why'd you forget to study? I just wasn't really paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
And the worst part is you know that when push comes to shove, he's going to turn it on. And that's what bothers you. Because he's waiting to turn it on. And it's like, don't wait. Just do it. All the time. And, you know, I think one thing I want to touch on is we have an incredible revisionist history as Michigan State fans, period. And I want to just remind a lot of people of some things, because I know everyone's very down on this team in particular, which is fine. Do whatever you want to do. But one, the only colors, Paul Fanson wrote a really, really nice analytical article about what he calls the Bermuda Triangle or the February dip, which has happened 20 years in a row. If you feel like this has happened a lot, it's not necessarily by design, but it's because Tom Izzo coaches teams a certain way. And he goes into great detail year over year how that works. that cash, we wax poetically about certain teams, about they didn't do this or they were like this. And, you know, for what it's worth, the Cassius Winston Xavier Tillman team of 2020 that everyone was absolutely convinced, you know, will go to their graves saying would have won the Natty that year. They were 22-9. If people forget, they were 22-9. They lost 4 of 5 between February 1st and February 15th. They lost 4 of 5.
Yeah.
They had Cassius Winston, Xavier Tillman, Aaron Henry, Gabe Brown, Malik Hall. I mean, they had everyone. And so it's not to say that like anyone's wrong. I'm just pointing out that this happens, and it's just how Michigan State movies work. Now, you hope there's no guarantee it's going to spring into, you know, 6 straight wins. I'm just reminding you that the lull that you're seeing is not new, and you may remember that, but just don't forget when we wax so poetically about our best teams, like they did it too. So that's a great long segue into, you know, the fact that I tried to remind everyone is so mad that Michigan State blew a 15-point lead at Maryland, but they won 65-63. But you would not have known that they had won on the road against a very proud program. Maryland, we've talked about it, while mid, a very proud program. And, sure. And Malik Hall wins the game on a near last second take to the basket, which, big onions, everyone's asking, you know, who's the guy? Well, there you go, found a guy. And the other thing that he did that I think that everyone overlooked is he hit some very big crunch time free throws with under 2 minutes to go, right after the game where he missed free throws that would have either, you know, tied the game and put it to overtime. So that's huge, huge. And so everyone is very upset about a win at Maryland, which boggled my mind. But hey, I put myself in a different mind state than others during basketball games, and it's all legal. Like weed is legal. So like chill, but
people forget
in Illinois, it's fine, and Michigan. So I'm just saying, like, the lull may have happened, but you know what the takeaway for me is? MSU is living the lull right now, but they actually won one of the games they usually lose. Like the Maryland loss, the Maryland game is usually a loss, but
yeah,
they won. And so like you should just like be happy with that. Now, we won't spend a ton of time on that game because, you know, the next game is the one we want to focus on, and the upcoming ones. They did turn around and go and lose at Butgers by 20.
Yeah, and that's not okay. It's like the opposite of the Dumb and Dumber thing where it's like you totally redeemed yourself. It's just that in the complete reverse. And like,
yeah,
it's fine. Whatever. Rutgers, I think, shot like 60-something% from three, and they're one of the worst 3-point shooting teams in the country. Right. You know, it was just everything. It's one of those where everything comes together. The world plans and plots against you, and it, you know, shows up on the floor like that. You know, I'm not going to get too bent out of shape, but it's games like that where I'm just like, well, you know, okay. Like, that's why I'm not, like, over the moon, you know, freaking out about anything.
There's too many good things to put your energy towards than MSU losing early February games. Happens every year. And, yeah, it's never great to lose at Rutgers, but again, go look at this article. Go do whatever your own research. Go look. MSU hits a lull. It's just how it works. And the reason you are going to sustain through this lull and get mad, everyone's mad. Ah, I'm so mad. It makes it the reason you have to get this mad to have it feel so good in a month from now. Okay? That's how it works. You don't get to not get pissy because you do that so that March feels great. So first things first, I'm going to say one good thing. in a 20-point loss at Rutgers, it's hard. MSU took a huge punch in the first half. Rutgers shot 62% going into halftime, and MSU is down 2. Now, Rutgers continued that incredible shot streak and shot 62% for the entire game. That was the worst defensive game for Michigan State since they won the last game. It was so bad against Gonzaga. But, hey, never good. But I also, unless something terribly drastic happened, I don't see teams – like, I don't see Michigan State's defense being that bad all the time. Like, they're not a bad defensive team. They aren't. They're not good, but they're not bad. Like, teams aren't going to shoot over 50% often. So I'm not that bad. The other thing is, we learned a really hard truth. Tyson Walker can't handle road environments. and here's the thing. People forget, this guy played in, like, the Colonial League last year. And, you know, what? How many people went to Northeastern games, right? Like, it's a big jump. It is. You cannot simulate that. And the thing that, like, really, really, the only thing that made me mad in the entire game, honestly, Austin, is that Tom Izzo played Walker with 2 fouls. And it probably took 20 years and infinite amounts of Kevin Pauga data to like explain to him that it's okay to play people with 2 fouls in the first half. And in 30 seconds, Walker just ruined it by going and getting his stupid foul and getting his 3rd foul. And, like, we'll never – and now we're going to go back to auto bench after 2 fouls, and then I'm just, like, slamming my head against the – I'm going to censor myself because I'm already upset about a thing that hasn't happened yet. But, like, you know it's coming, and it's like – no, just because a kid was really dumb doesn't mean that you shouldn't not play guys with 2 fouls and it's over. It took 20 years to convince him and he did it and it's ruined. And I am mad online.
See, I think here's the problem. I don't care. Like, it's fine. Yeah, I agree. It sucks to have progress just ripped away from you like that, but yeah, I mean, you might be right. You might be right about Tyson, though. I mean, he does not seem to handle these road environments very well. And that's probably not going to be great come the NCAA tournament.
There's no tournament. There's no fans. I mean, at best, it's going to be – or excuse me, at worst, it's going to be 50-50 with the way MSU travels.
Yeah, probably true.
Like, I'm not worried about it. The only thing that I'll ever be worried about is when MSU plays the first half of a double when you're the higher seed.
Yes.
When I say that, and you know where I'm going with that, but if you're a listener, you're not quite understanding what I'm saying. Let's say MSU's a 4 seed and they're the first game and you're 4-13. All the 5-12 fans are going to get there probably around halftime. Of course you're going to root for that 13 seed because you want to play the 13 if you win. That's the only time where it gets a little, you know, rowdy against the high seed. You always want to be the 2nd game for what it's worth. But beyond that, like, I'm not too worried about it because it's like, okay, he's going to go get shook at, like, what, 4 more games, and then we're done with it. So, like, whatever. Mm-hmm.
I got to say one other thing that we pointed out last week that is – it's actually just turned into probably my biggest concern is that Max Christie goes, so goes this team.
It's a pattern.
So obvious. It is the through line for all of the success that MSU has had. I mean, in this against Maryland, you know, yeah, like you said, MSU won. He went 0-3 from deep, scored 7 points in 32 minutes. This last game on Saturday, he plays 30 minutes, goes 2 of 8 from deep, 2 of 10 from the field, and only has 6 points. If he's not hitting shots, MSU doesn't have, aside from Gabe Brown, anyone that's going to be good from deep. I mean, neither of their point guards are really willing to shoot very much. No one off the bench. I mean, Akins will shoot a little bit. Malik's a fine 3-point shooter, but that's not where he's at his best.
No, that's true.
So I think that's, to me, he is now the harbinger of good news or bad news for basically the offense for Michigan State. I think the more troubling thing out of this one is, yes, Rutgers shot the ball really well, but like they went 9 of 20 from deep. Like it's not, you know, I know that's they good. Shot really well. It's good, but it's not the 3-point shooting that concerns me as much. If they went that, they shot 45% from the field too, or no, excuse me, that was Michigan State. Yeah, they shot 61% from the field and 45% from three. I'm not as worried about the 3-point shooting in this one. Teams are going to go 9 of 20. Teams are not going to go 23 of 32 from within the 3-point line.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes, that's good shooting on their part, but it's also like, where's the defense? Like, that's what makes me nervous.
They hit good shots. They hit bad shots. And here's the other thing. The scout on Dean Reber is, let him do whatever he can. Because he's terrible.
5 of 6.
And he did, and he had 12 points. And you're like, you know what? We weren't going to win this one.
MSU got out-rebounded by a lot, too, which is never encouraging. That's what scares me.
That's the only problem. And you know what? I have a head coach that cares about one thing. That.
Yeah.
Literally that. He calls up Mel Tucker. He's going to make Keon and Malik Carr not want to play basketball anymore.
Yeah.
Because he's going to bust out the football pads and have a harder practice than they had on the football field. Like let's be honest. Like, he cares about one thing, and he's spent the last 5 days talking about rebounding. So what better game to have than against a Wisconsin team that you know is going to play the pace you want to play, you know is not going to try and turn you over, because that's where we struggle. So MSU will not turn the ball over at a high rate, because simply Wisconsin doesn't want to even force it. It's going to be a war, and it's going to be a home game. And Wisconsin is 18-4, 9-3, and Tyler Wall is going to play this game. He wasn't in the last game. And honestly, you would have thought that this guy was Kobe Bryant on the last broadcast, with the way they talked about how he wasn't playing. And it's like, okay, he's fine. Like he's mid plus, but like, let's calm down that this guy's a different. Now, he's going to make it a more difficult game, but Johnny Davis still has to produce, and he hasn't proven in his one game against MSU that he can do that. You know, Max Christie is going to play defense against him. A.J. Hogarth is going to hit his shot. And Johnny Davis's game is predicated on the mid-range and just being able to elevate higher than you and shoot. He struggled with that against Max, and that's not going to change. So you're going to lean really hard on the Izzo in this game, but there's a reason Michigan State's favored.
Johnny Davis has been in a big time funk offensively since Michigan State. His last four games, he's gone 5 of 12 from the field, 7 of 14, which is fine. 5 of 19 against Illinois and 2 of 13 against Penn State. He's made 1 3-pointer since he played against MSU. One singular. Now he's crushed the rebounding. He's had like 48 rebounds or something crazy like that. And he's still getting to the line. He got to the line quite a bit against Illinois. Didn't get to the line at all against Penn State. So, you know, again, you say Max teams go as Max Christie goes. I mean, Johnny Davis is that on overdrive steroids. So, again, I think Wisconsin's a good, not great team. I think this is a game Michigan State on paper should win. Because Wisconsin doesn't really try to rebound with you either. They really just kind of sprint and get back and try to play defense. They scored 51 points against bad Penn State team their last time out. And you have to wonder with Johnny Davis specifically if he's starting to get tired. I mean, this guy hasn't played less than 30 minutes since November.
Yep.
Like, so, you know, because he doesn't get in foul trouble either. So you got to wonder if his legs are starting to go. And if his legs start to go, man, they talk about crazy shooting performances. I don't know if Brad Davidson's going to come out and hit 6 threes again.
He's there. He's the only reason they're in the game.
Only reason. So, you know, this is another great opportunity for a get right game for Michigan State. They seem to be doing this yo-yo thing through the middle of the year.
Dude, they beat.
And honestly, here's the thing. If these losses were to just like even middle of the road teams and not a bad Northwestern team, a bad Rutgers is fine, but a bad Rutgers team, and then Illinois without its two best players. Like, if it's not those teams, then I think everybody kind of takes this a little more in stride, but it's just not great to lose those games to those teams. Well, but this is a great opportunity to add to the resume.
But also, everyone needs to take a breath and realize that this is the same team minus a few players that barely made the tournament last year.
Mm-hmm. Sure. You know,
so, like, relax with the expectations a bit. And also, like, embrace the fact that you're jockeying for seed position, whereas last year at this time, we were like, streak's over, man.
Yeah.
Do we even accept an NIT bid? You know?
Yeah. No, it's absolutely true.
For what it's worth, here are the last three games for Wisconsin. Four games. Five games. Lost to us. Beat Nebraska by 8. Beat Minnesota's five-player team by 6. Lost at Illinois by double digits. Beat Penn State 51-49, a game that was at halftime, Austin 18-13.
Oh.
They should have just nuked the building and just said we're done.
Yeah, just take it out. Maybe end the sport.
Maybe we don't play basketball anymore.
I think they should just roll dice against each other.
So the point is like, you know, everyone's like, oh, the sky is falling, Michigan State. Well, here's the deal. If you, and for what it's worth, Wisconsin is 18-4. Like, you have a huge opportunity on your hands against a team that at the end of the day has Johnny Davis, Brad Davison, and Tyler Wahl, and Stephen Crowell as maybe the only net neutral plus team guys on the team. We have 7 plus guys or neutral guys. So just use the Izzone, grind it out, be the better team. And then you move on and play a broke-ass Indiana group.
Yeah, I have a question for you about Indiana. Do you think anybody regrets their college choice as much as Trace Jackson Davis? Like, what a bummer, dude. Like, you could have gone.
He came back. I can't believe he came back.
I can't believe he went there in the first place. Like, and it's just a bad idea. It's just, like, this. It must be such a bummer. But, I mean, he's a really good player, but I don't know. I don't think this Indiana team is anything special. Now that I'm going to say that, and they're going to just beat the brakes off Michigan State because they always give us a hard time. But
they're just,
you know, if nothing else, they're at least like kind of like 8 or 9 deep at this point. Like, you actually play players. I feel like historically they've been like a 3-player team and that's it. I mean, Trace Jackson Davis, great player, 18 points, 8.5 rebounds a game. He averages almost 3 blocks a game. Doesn't do anything outside of the paint, but is a really dynamic athlete, both defensively and offensively. Going to need a big game from Bingham in this one. I do not think this is a Julius Marvel game. And I swear to God, if I see Joey Hauser guarding Trace Jackson Davis, I'll just turn the TV off. But the other guy that really makes me nervous is Race Thompson. I feel like Race Thompson, without fail, gives Michigan State a hard time every single game. Again, guys, he's tough, man. He's just like sort of that weird Kenny Goins-ish, but way more athletic, sort of like in-betweener position. He averages 11.5 points, 7.5 rebounds. He's the type of guy that if he was on my team, I would love. But he's not, so I don't like him. Yeah, that's a great point. Well, he's just not as good a shooter as Malik Hall.
No,
yeah,
he's just tough as hell.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time taking Indiana seriously just because of – it's Indiana. I mean, they've lost games. They lost. I mean, I just look at who they've lost to this year, and it's sort of pathetic. I mean, they lost at Syracuse. He gave up 112 points to Syracuse this year. That's horrible. They lost on the road to Penn State this year.
Hey,
they lost.
Until further notice, they kind of own us. So
yeah, fine. Okay, have fun. Like, you want to talk about meaningless victories? Congratulations, dude. You beat us. That's cool for you. How have the rest of your seasons gone? When was the last time Indiana was relevant?
I'd also say they need to, like, beat Northwestern first for me to get truly worked up. Like, I'm not 100% sure.
That's they can't do anything for me to get worked up. I'm not, it's not possible for me to get worked up.
And here's,
look,
and here's
this team is so bad. Like, last year, they should be embarrassed. I'm just looking at the way they ended their schedule last year. They ended the season on a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 game losing streak, including 2 losses to Rutgers and 2 losses to a terrible Michigan State team.
Time out.
It took them double overtime to beat Northwestern last year. Like, this team is freaking garbage, man. They went 12-15. You're Indiana. Like, have some pride, right? Oh, like, that's even in our – this is a good contextual moment, John. I'm going to do it for you. This is why I shouldn't be mad.
I love it.
Because it could be that. It could be that. Here's a fun game. When's the last year you think Indiana finished with a over 500 record in the Big Ten?
When was Tommy there last? Tommy?
No, seriously, what year?
2000.
I want you to tell me the year.
2014.
2015. For those who don't have a calendar in front of them, it's 2022. This is Indiana. I'm supposed to take you seriously, and you can't even go over 500 in your own conference. Remember who was their point guard back then? Yogi Ferrell.
Yogi Ferrell.
That's a person that most people that are listening to this podcast don't know was a person. Like, Indiana, it's like, congratulations, guys. You beat Michigan State. Like, that's fun for you. Tell me the next time I should care that you're playing in basketball. That means anything.
We literally, Michigan State kept Archie employed. I'll be honest, he did. Michigan State kept Archie employed. He was
the win. 100%.
Right? And so, I already told you the story why Trace Jackson Davis came back. I said it, I think, this summer. The reason he he was gone. Gone. As he should have been, by the way. Yeah. And Mike Woodson came in and had a meeting with Trace and his dad. And Mike came prepared because Mike, by the way, looked at this roster and was like, we are trash.
He also didn't have anything else going on, so.
Well, that's why he was there. Right. And he came in and said, Trace, here is, you know, he did a cut up his entire season and told him all the things that he was like basically bad at. Something that Archie Miller never did, by the way, never tried to improve him, which was one of the reasons he was as good as gone to the NBA. Trace's dad came into Mike Woodson's office and was like, oh, we're coming back next year because you've highlighted a lot of reasons why my son won't succeed in the NBA. And to be fair, like, good on Mike. He was an NBA coach. Like, we dog him, but like, the guy knows what he's doing. Like,
sure.
It, especially when you're trying to develop NBA talent and you're like, maybe he's not, he doesn't do X, Y, or Z. And so Trace Jackson Davis, for what it's worth, is having a great season. You know, he's having a really nice season, but you got to have more than him. To be an adult program. And I think the thing that kills me about Indiana is we're just dogging them now because we've turned a corner.
It's fun.
They have 5 stars on their, you know, the butt of their shorts, which, first of all, if you're going to put the 5 stars that represent the 5 national championships, why are you putting it on your butt? That's a weird place to put it. And like, also, you're repping a thing that none of you were alive for.
Yeah.
Some of your assistant coaches weren't alive for.
But dude, that is the definition of living in the past. And we give Michigan a hard time, but like, I remember Michigan. Like, I'm old and I remember Michigan being that good. What? I'm supposed to remember like Tom Coverdale. Like, what am I supposed to get excited about? Like, I'm supposed to the only reason I remember who Dane Fife is because he coached at Michigan State. Yeah. Michigan State is honestly sort of like, I don't even know the best term to use. Without Michigan State, you don't have Tom Crean, who's the only thing that's made you relevant in the last 20 years. And without Michigan State, you don't have your only marquee wins of the last 20 years. Like, that's it. Like, that's what you have is your victories over us. And that's fine. That's fun for you.
Their other win is against Kentucky. That one buzzer beater. Yeah,
which was awesome. But guess who the head coach was? Tom Crean.
And you know what else they do? They treat that game like Texas football treats their win over USC. It was so long ago. You need to grow up. Like, respect yourself enough to stop celebrating things that happened in 2015.
No, it's just like, it was fun. It was cool.
You did a cool thing. Grow up. Like, most programs do cool things every year.
Yeah, and right.
I don't know.
Here's one for you. Besides that, the biggest Indiana highlight I can remember is Victor Oladipo missing a dunk against Michigan. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where I thought he was going to do the most acrobatic thing. That, like, had he finished that, I wouldn't be saying any of these things because it would have been the single coolest basketball highlight of all time. But
Think about what you just said. You didn't even realize you said it. Think about what you said. An Indiana player didn't convert a thing was the coolest thing you could remember.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what I mean. It's like,
John.
Should we turn the corner here and have some takeaways from this game? Because I want to get back on quickly on track for Michigan State, if you don't mind.
No, please.
In the last five games, four or five were on the road. Okay. Four or five. We talked about it. Yep. They went 3-2. They beat their rival. Beat a quad 2 Michigan team, which you should have done. Great. Which is fine. But the problem is, like we talked about last week, if you don't beat Maryland and Rutgers, you're unserious. Unfortunately, right now, until further notice, Michigan State's basketball team is unserious.
That's correct. It brings us no pleasure to say this, but at this point, I mean, really, you can't look at Michigan State and take them like you can't take them seriously right now. Now, that can change. I think that's a really important point here. But in order for that to change, it's got to be two wins this week. It's got to be two wins this week. There's no other way around it. You have to be a mid Wisconsin, like a above average, I suppose, Wisconsin team.
They're fine.
Yeah, but you have to win. I think you have to win your next three games for me to get to a point where I'm ready to consider taking them seriously again. And then you host Illinois. And then if you can win your next four, then I'm taking you seriously because you're peaking as you're getting into the end of February, which is what they typically do. So, you know. But it's got to start now. You can't compound a 21-point road loss to Rutgers with a loss at home to a team you outclassed not that long ago.
The good news is you think it's a win or a loss. It doesn't matter how bad or how good it was, right? Lose it 20 at Rutgers, it's still one loss. Doesn't matter, right? So there's that. And then you take it the next step. Wisconsin's going to get Tyler Wahl back. He's good. He's fine. Use the Izone. Like, if you're at the game, turn it up, win this game. And then if they, do the thing, beat a good Wisconsin team, who will be a 4 seed, by the way, and be annoying as hell in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to play Indiana, who will make the NCAA tournament and be annoying as hell to some 2 seed in the 7-10 game. Like, they're fine. Win those games if you want us to take you seriously, because they're home games. And then we get to have a conversation about the teams we don't want to play. And you and I are compiling a list, but it's not even worth going through if they don't win these two games.
Yep. So I agree.
That's
what we couldn't agree more. So you got it. If you want to be off the unserious bubble, you got to do some winning here, fellas. And I think, I can watch these games emotionless, and it'll just be great. All right, John. Hey, that was fun. We had some good trashing of Indiana, which always makes for a fun podcast. So I'm glad we're able to do that.
Maybe this is us now. It's just who we are.
I think it is.
We turned a corner. We are as old and just ready. We're done with the beats.
Old and petty, baby. That's how I plan to live the rest of my life. All right. Well, guys, as always, thanks for sticking with us. For John, this has been Austin. We'll catch you next week.
Yeah.